This is Audrey Loftus talking to Fred T. Walker in Nome. This is another side of a tape, and he'll continue his story.
Frank would never... didn't believe in hard work. Pick and shovel was too low for him. So he says, I was working for the Wild Goose then, putting in 12 hours a day and $10 a day. I thought it was big money. When I struck Gabe Price, remember him? Gabe Price, the Wild Goose manager on Anvil Creek. I struck him for a job. He says, hello, kid. What do you want? I'm looking for work, I says. You need men? Yes, we need men bad, but he says, I don't believe in hiring kids. How old are you? I say 21. He looked at me. He says, I know you're not telling the truth. You haven't begun to shave yet. But see, I'll take you on. So when I went down to town after working there a while, my partner, Frank Kamaroff, he says, have you heard the news, Fred? I says, what? He says, they're finding gold on the beach. I said, why don't you go to work then? He says, needs more than work. Needs material. I said, buy it then. I know what he was after. He says, I haven't got the money, Fred. Look, Fred, he says, you furnish me $100. I'll buy the material and finish the rocker. And when it's finished, I'll tell you to quit your job up there. And I would go rocking. The fellow I was trying to think of, I says, how do you find this beach gold? Oh, he says, there's some soldiers here. Every payday, they just drawn $16 a month. And that evening, they're always broke, but they always go down the beach and pan out whiskey money. That's their bank down there, Fred. Well, he says, an old fella by the name of Abe Hummel.
Abe Hummel,
that's what I was trying to think.
Yes.
He used to open up some claims for John Dex on Dry Creek, and in the meantime, he got rheumatism, and he couldn't go to work. After he began to be able to hobble around, he goes down on the beach, and he sees these soldiers panning on the beach. Some of them had pie plates, and one or two had gold pans. Making much, boys? Enough for whiskey money. Why don't you make a rocker? What is a rocker? Rock a baby to sleep? No. So he goes ahead and makes a rocker. Oh, it takes some days. So Frank was telling me this. He says, I seen that fellow making a hot rocker, and he says, you furnish me the $100, I'll make it. He says, across there was a ship. The Seven Sisters been drifted ashore, and somebody bought it at auction sale. He'd bought it cheap before the beach was struck. And that fellow made money out of them copper sheeting bottoms.
That just keeps the barnacles off.
Yeah. A square foot, $5 a square foot. And everybody anxious to get it.
Yes.
Money is no object. Quicksilver went up. Muriatic acid went up. Well, I gave Frank the money, and when he told me to quit, he's all ready, and I quit, and we went across. That's where I ran across Key Pittman.
The lawyer.
The lawyer, yeah. He was rocking on the beach. And this old fella I was telling about, there's an old fella by the name of, I guess, can't think of it. An old fella, he's rocking on the beach, too. I come out there early in the morning and this fella be rocking away. Come back late in the evening, he'd be rocking away. He didn't even have time to make himself a pot of tea or a pot of coffee. I finally goes up to him, I says, partner, had to go quite a ways over the hill, over the tundra, and get water from Snake River, which was quite a distance. I says, partner, I'll take your pot and get you some water. My partner didn't like that for being too friendly with this fella. He didn't like it. And this old fella, he caught on right away. He says, young man, what's your name? I says, my name is Fred Walker. What was his name again? McClellan.
McClellan.
He's an Irishman. McClellan, that's what he is, McClellan. He says, call me Jim McClellan. I says, I'm Fred. He says, Fred, have you been mining long? I say, this is my first experience. He says, you're not going to quit. He says, he's cleaning up. He's panning out his black sand and ruby sand from the gold. I says, that black stuff, I says, why couldn't it be away from the gold and gold be easy to get? He says, Fred, he says, wherever you see black gold, black sand, he says, in a big body, and ruby sand, see this, he says, that's what we call ruby sand. He says, look around. And as soon as he said that, I called that place down there that I ran across during the winter when they were coming up, heading for Nome.
That's is on which creek again?
That is on creek, yeah.
Daniel Creek,
yeah. I says, I'm heading for there. Well, we rocked on the beach.
How many men were rocking on the beach at that time?
Why? At that time, it was about 300. But say, later on, wow! Tents all over, all over. That whole beach was lined up with people and those who were camping in town. Why, they were men and women.
Everyone was camping.
Everybody was rocking. Well, guess when the big crowd, before the big crowd come in, there's some fellows here. Oh, that's who I was trying to think. Kettleson. Dr. Kettleson. And R.T. Young. And Dr. Southward. There are three more I can't remember.
Yeah.
They seen
R.T.
us.
Lane.
Huh?
R.T. Ling.
R.T. Ling?
Ling.
R.T. Ling. They seen us when we was rocking on the beach and doing pretty good, and pretty soon a sign was put up on the riverbank. Anybody want to rock on the beach? Ask for so-and-so permit. From so-and-so. $5, and the $5 only good for that day. So we come along, me and my partner, he says, Fred, he says, look at that. I said, that's nothing. I said, that's all hot air. And he's one of these fellows, he's very timid. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm going to buy that permit. I said, you'll never see that money anymore. I said, these fellows are lying about it. Well, those who didn't have a permit were to be arrested underneath his state. Uh-huh. Well, towards afternoon, sure enough, I could see them going along on the rockers and got a permit? No. Finally, they come to me. And alongside of us was a fellow by the name of, what is his name? He became the first mayor of Nome.
Cashel,
yeah, Tom Cashel. Uh-huh. He became the first mayor of Nome. Well, he's rocking just beyond me. I'm rocking down below, and I know the sergeant very well from St. Miles. Sergeant McKay.
Now, he was Army? Is that
the Army?
They sent
uh-huh.
a bunch of men over
there. Oh, they sent some soldiers over
here. Soldiers over here during the winter.
Yes, uh-huh. To keep order.
Yeah, keep order. Uh-huh. Say, if it hadn't been for them, that fellow was bright-headed, all right. Colonel Randall, General Randall.
He was wise to have sent
them. He was out, he'd been an Indian fighter, you know, mining camp's condition.
Yes.
I always say that was a wise move. Well, this, and the lieutenant's fallen.
Yeah.
I heard he climbed way up afterwards.
Yeah.
Say, you was talking about Egbert?
Yes, Fort Egbert.
You know who the commanding officer was up there that time?
No.
Bell.
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 Uh-huh.
He was stationed at St. Michael's when they were sending up some soldiers from St. Michael's up the Yukon. He was put in as commander officer.
He was the first commander of Fort Egbert then at near
Egbert.
Yes.
Lieutenant Bell. I just thought of that name this morning.
Uh-huh. Did they arrest you then? And
what that?
Did they arrest you when you didn't buy
I talked to McKay. I said, Sergeant, they can't claim. He says, I can't say nothing, Freddy. He says, you go down and face the music. So we was all roped in. We was put into we refused to pay our own fare across the river. This was 50 cents.
50 cents
to cross the river. 50 cents. We refused to pay our fare. They paid us. They paid our fare over. Mm-hmm. We was put into a big unfinished warehouse belonged to the AC Company. Mm-hmm. So pretty soon it'll come close to supper time now. I was looking for Keith Pittman. I was looking around. He didn't happen to be amongst that bunch. He must have had a permit or something.
Well, he the one that told you to fight it?
He was among
the quarter.
Yeah.
How many of you were locked up in this warehouse?
About 200.
About 200.
Yeah, 200. And amongst us was a woman. Out of courtesy, they let her out.
They let her out.
Because the miners were using dirty language all
the time. Let the one woman go back.
Yeah. Well, along come close to supper time. Committee come around and says, you like to eat? I said, with the whole trimmings. I says, beef steak, right from with pie and everything, I said. So, this committee, they done it. And they put the petition to the lieutenant. Lieutenant Spaulding. The lieutenant, he goes up and he asks these fellas, well, what are you going to do about these fellas now? Who's going to feed them? They're all hungry. Now, I'm not going to feed them. You're not going to feed them. I'm going to turn them loose. Rather than feed us and face our bill, they let us out.
It probably have cost them $5 to feed you one night. did they try to collect that fee after that?
I told my partner, I said, why don't you collect your money? She says, you just blame each other. This fella, I got nothing to do with it.
Uh-huh.
They squirmed out. They got the money all right.
Well, that was a good racket while it lasted.
Guarantee. But it didn't work. Yeah, it didn't.
No.
Well, while we were rocking on the beach there, there's lots of these fellas that come in late. Here at Nome, from Dawson way and Circle City way and outside there, they come out in the country, all steak. Oh, they want to call a miners' meeting. I forget that ex-judge, some judge outside.
Shields?
A fellow by the name of, with the attorney here by the name of Nahum or Calhoun or here in the early days. Well, anyway, this meeting was called to order, and the order was that all these had been here in the wintertime staking. All the miners agreed that the ground be exposed again. Relocation. They called for relocating all these cricks. Now this Lieutenant Spaulding, he come down, he heard they were gonna have a meeting. When Susie comes in the door, I looked and he comes up. He had his soldiers lined up. And here's the chairman. He read a big foreman. When he come to the place, when he read that article about the claims to be relocated, all the claims to be relocated and to give the second fellows a chance to stay, relocate the country. Spoiler, he stood up. He says, that doesn't go. I'm here to represent the law. What these miners have staked faithfully during the winter, it holds. Take it out. If you don't take it out, I'll have my men clear the hall.
My God, he cleared the hall.
He made it stay.
If it hadn't been for him, it'd have been bloodshed out in that creek.
Oh, sure. I should say.
Boy, that was something terrible. Yeah, I call that rotten.
Yeah.
Miners, these old fellas, gamblers and team horns like that, want to take the law in their own hands. There's no judge or anything like that.
No,
he represented the law.
Just the miner's law was
yeah,
all there was.
Yeah, yeah.
See, that you said about where you sold that property for $12,000. Now, why did you do that?
Down at Bluff.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
Well,
this is the second side of the Fred T. Walker tape taken at Nome, Alaska on July 10th, 1960.
When this old fuller had told me about black sand being a good indication to find gold, black sand and ruby sand in big bodies, I immediately thought of the place I ran across coming to Nome with dog team down that bluff. So when it come time to go prospecting after rocking on the beach, I began looking around for a boat. I had a man in with me that I worked on board a steamer. He was the first assistant engineer of the steamer, Alice, and I was his water tender and oiler on the watch. When Dawson's strike come along, he jumped the job. He jumped the steamer and he headed for the Dawson gold mine. So a few years after, when Nome was struck, here he comes along to us in the month of September. I say his name was Billy Hunter. I says, Billy, I suppose you're a pretty good prospector now. He says, the best in the country. Being underage and having lost everything in Nome, I made the proposition up to him. I says, Billy, I've staked in Nome, I've staked town wealth, I've staked out in the outlying creeks around Nome, I've lost everything. I says, the people that jumped my claim, they knew about me from Dawson. They knew I was underage. And it was on that ground they said I was underage and I lost everything. Now I say, here's the proposition I want to make with you, Billy. I says, I'm going to take you to a place. I think it's money. Here's the situation. When we strike it, you stake and deed me over half. Oh, he says, that's fine. He says, Fred, I have nothing to buy an outfit with. I says, I've got the money. My banker was Tex Rickett. Of the North Saloon. Northern Saloon.
Uh-huh.
He knew my mother from Dawson.
Yes.
I was very well acquainted with him. I knew his partner, Murphy.
Yes.
I knew Bob Inglis. I knew all them old-timers.
Now, the reason you couldn't stake was that you were still not 21.
I wasn't
you
21,
thought that
yeah.
You couldn't,
I couldn't.
Yeah.
I wasn't 18 yet.
You weren't even 18 then.
I was always told, you're young. Well, that took a good grip of me. So Billy Hunter, he says, I'll do that, Fred. But he says, I haven't got the money to pay my share of the outfit. So I hunt around for a floating boat, for a boat that would carry us, and I couldn't get a boat. They had their born dories busy here. Every time they took out a passenger out to the boat, $25. Take a passenger ashore, $25.
Off the Nome Road station?
Yes. Yeah, everybody hanging on to the boat. And the best thing we could get a hold of was a three-hole bidarkie.
A three-hole bidarkie?
Bidarkie, it's a kayak.
Yes, skin kayak.
I says, Billy, that's the only thing we can get a hold of. And the fella, you know him well, Al Brunel. He owned it. I goes up to him. I found out that the bidarkie belonged to him. I said, Brunel, I knew him from St. Michael's. He'd worked for the AC company years and years ago. I said, I understand that bidarkie down there is yours. What's the chance of using it? Plenty. Good chances, Fred. Four, good, I want to use it. Hold on, he said, you haven't heard all of it. He says, that bidarkie says $10 a day, rent. Gee whiz, I said, I don't want to marry the bidarkie. I got mad at him. I said, I just want to rent it. I says, all right. I says, when I'm storm bound, no pay. Oh, no. The time that bidarkie leaves Nome, till it gets back. $10 straight time. I said, I'm just going on a prospecting trip. I wasn't going to tell him what I thought I had. It's all right. All right. I'll pay. He says, you haven't heard the last of it yet. He says, before that bidarkie gets out of my sight, $50 down. Wow, I say good night. $50 in advance. If you're back before them, he says, I'll return the money. Well, we've gone 12 days, I think, round trip. Well, we got down there. We paddled along. Happened to have big, good weather, good calm water, no storm. As soon as we got down there, this fellow, he says, now, where's the gold? Where's the gold? And he stops me in the back and says, where's the gold? Where's the gold? I says, man, I knew right away I was flim-flam. Thinks I to myself, if he'd learned very much about prospecting up in Dawson, he wouldn't say that. I say, look at the chances. Look at the chances. Look at the black sand. Look at the ruby sand. And he says, I knew. I thought I had been taken on a wild goose chase. I got kind of hot. I says, going up the house, Sam. Cook a supper. It was late in the evening. See, we unloaded and packed the stuff up, and I began making the sand fly. I took the first pan, and boy, could have knocked me over the fence. I got about $5 or $6 pan right off. Wow. Gee, you better know. I was in Coos Bottle. I goes up and runs to Billy and said, Billy, we got it. We got it. Look. Yeah, he says, Nome Beach Girl. Nome Beach Girl.
Thought you were a fool again.
Yeah. I put it in the empty can saucer. I said, I'm going to go down again. And the further I got over, it was good. The further I was going to go, then it was dark.
Uh-huh.
I had about $25. And all the evening I was thinking of what I was going to buy and what I was going to get. I'm rich now. Well, I was talking about how I was going to be a millionaire very soon. He's just grinning and seemed like he didn't believe me. So next morning, early in the morning, we gets up and he says, "Where's your hole?" "Hey, see there, down there." I says, "The others are covered up by water." He says, "Now you keep away from me." And he goes right in front of the richest part of Daniel's Creek, and he sinks. I didn't know it then. Boy, he goes down a little ways and pans away, and I was watching him. He didn't want me to go near him.
Afraid you'd salt the
pan. Salt him, yeah. Pretty soon he took a pan. I was watching him. I guess while he was taking a pan there, he washed a while, and he stopped. And he'd look up Daniel's Creek, and he'd look at me. He says, "I know you haven't been over here." I said, "You got a pretty good pan, Billy?" "Pretty good." And he had close to $50 in his pan. Wow! Bedrock was just that deep.
About 3 feet to bedrock.
3 feet, yeah. That's what we call that hot pan, is what we call bedrock in them days.
Yes.
Boy, just so sir, I say to him, "Can I come over?" "Yes." I comes over and he could see the gold in the sand there. I said, "Billy, come on. Stake it. Stake the whole creek up here," I said. "Include me." I said, "Give me half." I see, that's the agreement. Well, he hummed and hawed. He says, "I tell you what I'll do." I says, "Never mind what you're going to do." I say, "Stake." I say, "Don't forget there's people running all over the country and they're going to run onto this place. Stake," I says, "and lead me over half." I says, "No use me staking. I've lost everything off Nome." "You think he'd stake?" "No. Come away without even slapping in a stake." Well, finally I made up my mind. My mother's over in St. Michael's. Jump on board a boat from here and go to St. Michael's and bring my mother over. My sister too is over there. That's the last year I've seen her. That was in 1999. I haven't seen her since.
No, 1899.
She'd come from Dawson. And she's in St. Michael's waiting for transportation and going across St. Michael's on board the Sadie. We met the St. Paul, the new St. Paul. And I felt so sincere about her being on board the boat. I knew I was right. She's on board that boat. And she's going on the outside. And I'd missed my mother about a week.
Oh, who'd you get to stake your property?
She'd gone to Dawson.
Uh-huh.
There I was. And there, this fella, he was along with me. He's keeping tab of me. He's going to see I wouldn't sneak around or keep quiet. He wanted me to keep quiet.
Yes.
Everybody asked me, "Well, how's the prospect?" And, "Well, I don't know. I guess it's still there." That's all I'd say. Well, we got down to St. Michael's. And that happened to be the last boat to St. Michael's. The old steamer Sadie. Here he was telling me to keep an eye on me. Here he was stuck the same time. Well, during the winter, he got a kind of a sickness down there amongst the working men. So, the Captain Hansen, he come to me. He knew my folks well. And said, "Fred," he says, "You want a job?"
I hate to interrupt you, Mr. Walker, but this tape is getting close to the end, and it's the last one, so let's get your money out of this claim before we leave you.
Well, during the winter, Sullivan and Berger, they happen to go down that way.
Oh.
And they stake Daniel's Creek, and call it Daniel's Creek. In the meantime, this hunter that was taking me along to St. Michael's, I got sick. An old prospector, he come along, he says, Where are you working, Fred? I says, I'm working in that hospital there. In that hospital? AC hospital? I say, yes. Oh, he says, you keep away from here. Mm-hmm. I say, what's the matter? You seem to be scared of me. What's the matter? Don't you know they got typhoid cases in there? No, I says, I'm not sick yet. You will, though. You will get it. Sure enough, a couple of days after, I was down and out.
With the
typhoid.
With typhoid fever.
And in the meantime, Hunter sneaked off. He's heading for Bluff. When he got down there, he got down there. He was too late, 2 days too late.
Uh-huh.
Sullivan, Berger, and Ryan had beat him to it. Well, there he was. So he comes up here to Rome, and he meets Kegstead, Marquis, and Captain Hansen, too, I think it was long. No. And Hastings. And they club their money together, try and buy No. 1 Daniels. They appointed Texas to do that.
Yeah.
And they donated $5,000 together. They pooled the money to the equivalent of $5,000. For him, gave him the power to buy all Daniels Creek. Well, they done that. When he got here to Nome, takes the hint up this fella, and the fella take No. 1, he happened to run into him. Fella by name is George Ryan. Say, you got a claim for sale? Yes, yes, and she's rich, he's rich. How much you want for her? I'll sell it cheap. But she's rich. What do you call cheap? $500. So, He made out the paper to the lawyer's office and gave five down, bought No. 1 Daniels. So in the meantime, this Ryan, he tells these other fellas, Berger and Sullivan, say, there's a sucker in town. I sold my claim, $500, you fellas can sell. They come around, they offer to buy, to sell, to him the same price. He got cold feet. Here he had the money. Could afford it, didn't want it. He was afraid. Anyways, they got out.
The end of this tape is so close that I'm going to condense this. Captain Hansen knew that Fred was the original discoverer, not Hunter. So he talked the buyers into voting Fred into partnership. The only proof he needed was the original gold dust which he had penned upon discovery. Fred afterwards sold his interest for $12,000, which was paid by Henry Backus of the Minnesota Colorado Mining Company. Fred, now in July 1960, has 9 children, 50 grandchildren, 30 great-grandchildren, and lives in retirement in Nome, Alaska. And Fred, we thank you very much for cooperating with us and taking this tape.
Friana,
Fred.
Story. They come down to St. Michael's.